And, of course, you're tuned to Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, freakradio.org. And we have John S. Hall on the line. Hello, John. You there?
Hi. How are you, Bob?
Good. How are you doing?
I am good. So, I just want to apologize for last week because just for one thing that I did, I think it got misinterpreted. You know, when you were asking me the questions about someone who put something up on a website, I didn't actually realize you were talking about yourself. If I had realized, I would have maybe said things, I would have put it differently and probably drawn a distinction between what you do and what somebody who just puts up songs, you know, through, you know, like one of the various file sharing programs. I think what you do is different because you intersperse it with commentary or interviews or whatever. And a lot of times you're not playing the entire song, so to me it is more like radio broadcasting than you know, typical file sharing that involves songs or whole albums. So
yeah,
but also I mean, I thought I was talking about a hypothetical case. I didn't actually realize I was talking to you, and
okay.
It would be very rude to say that, you know, that what you're doing is wrong. In such stark words, even if I thought it was, which I don't. So I just wanted to make all that clear.
Well, I should have clarified myself too about it. Maybe told you that we're going to talk about that, but I thought I'd just throw it in there.
I didn't even know, you know, like, I'm in New York and I had never heard of your program, so I didn't even know that that's how you distribute your program. So,
oh, okay.
So I just didn't know at all what I was being asked about.
Okay, I'm also joined in the studio here with Matt, who does a show on Free Radio. He's also a musician.
Mm-hmm. Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah. So I guess one question that comes to mind already is in making the distinction between, like, people who just throw up songs, who are just sort of directly just sharing their, you know, whatever music they have on their CDs and throwing it up for everybody to grab their own copy of, and clearly you're making a distinction between, like, between that and what Bob is doing. I'm wondering where you see that gray area. Where does, like, how does that fit in with, say, sampling?
I mean, I should point out that I do think that Bob should be paying a licensing fee, but I don't think he should be asking for permission. Radio stations can play whatever music they want, and they don't have to ask permission. They just have to pay a licensing fee. Similarly, I can cover your song. I don't have to pay. I don't have to ask. I mean, I get your permission, but you have to give it to me. I have to ask for it. You have to give it to me, and I have to pay. So it isn't like a thing where you can stop me, but I can, you know. But I have to pay you. And I think actually that it would be probably good for the country. Well, I'm a country. I shouldn't say this. It's an open question whether or not, if I just took part of your song and created a new song, whether or not there should be a standard situation to deal with that, like I would pay you a certain amount in order to sample your song. But right now there isn't. If you take a sample of my song, then you're creating a derivative work. You could create a whole new work and say it's yours. I mean, that's the way sampling originally worked.
Mm-hmm.
I would just take a piece of somebody else's recording, put it in my song, and not pay the artist anything, and say that I've created a new song. And I think the problem there is it's hard to draw the line there of between, like, just copying someone else's song. I mean, if you take a little or if you take a lot, I'm not sure how to quantify it. But as far as just sampling, I guess part of me thinks that it should be a simpler mechanism. You know, right now, if I want to sample a David Bowie song, David Bowie can just say, "Well, I'm not going to let you," or "You can only do it if you give me $100,000." You know, they don't have to be reasonable. But whereas with covering songs, you know, I don't have any power. David Bowie doesn't have any power for me to to cover his song entirely. So
even if you put it on your album and sell it and you make money off of that cover?
Well, whether I sell it or not, if I make copies, I have to pay.
Okay.
So it's 8.5 cents per song per record. So if I make a thing of 10, if I make an album of 10 David Bowie songs, I can make as many copies as I want as long as I pay him 85 cents for each copy of the CD I make. 8.5 cents per song per CD. But the only other thing I have to do is I have to get what's called a compulsory license. It's called a compulsory license because they have to give it to me if I ask. So I let them know that I'm doing this, and then they and I write them the check, and then I'm fine.
Now, isn't that related mainly? I mean, like you were saying that I should pay a licensing fee. But it seems like people that pay licensing fee mainly want to put it on their own CD to sell, to make money off of. That's where the issue comes
in. Well, radio stations pay licensing fees too. I mean,
But they're also making, commercial radio stations are making money off of.
Well, non-commercial radio stations have to pay licensing fees too. They do. It's not a question of commercial or non-commercial. It's a question of copying.
Okay.
You know, what you pay for is the right to copy or the right to broadcast. And I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong,
whether this
distinction is making. I'm just telling you what the distinction is.
Right. As you know, I think that we tend to work a little bit outside the law here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, eschewing basic sort of, federal law and the FCC kind of all the time. So we do tend to take a little bit different position on it, just philosophically. And I guess that does come back in my mind. How do we make that distinction between artists who more directly use other artists' work in the creation of their own art versus, a painter who uses sort of ideas and topics and other things that are out there in the cultural mental landscape that they don't have to pay rights for those. I feel like we're creating these kind of artificial distinctions in a way.
Yeah, I think they are artificial distinctions. The law says that you can't copyright an idea, you can only copyright the expression of an idea. But what does that mean exactly?
Right.
Sometimes it seems as though the two things are very close. But I can make a play that follows precisely the plot of, say, The Producers, the Mel Brooks play.
Mm-hmm.
He can't sue me for that, but he can sue me if I use any of his dialogue or any of his characters. If I copy the way he expressed it, then I can get sued. But he can't sue me and win if I just take the ideas out of the play and make a new one. And that's why you often see on television the same kind of ideas over and over again. They don't have to pay for those ideas.
Right. So maybe ideally, sort of regardless of what the law currently is, how would you envision a way that we could, I hope, have greater levels of sharing, of open use, but also find a way to ensure that artists are paid fairly for the work that they do? Because it seems that in our society, artists are, grossly underpaid and neglected and relegated to the status of poverty, generally.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the problems was, I think, that Napster came around just at a time when I think artists were starting to envision a situation where they could sell their music directly through the internet and not have to sign with labels.
Mm.
And suddenly when Napster happened, artists realized, wow, if I put my stuff on the internet, I sell it once and then it goes all around, goes to anyone who wants it. I can't make money this way. In fact, the only way I can make money now is to sign with a label. There's no way I can, because even if I sell a CD myself, they can take that CD and put it on the internet. So even what I used to be able to do, I can't do anymore with the confidence that my stuff will be protected. But I don't blame Napster entirely for that. I mean, obviously people had to make the decision to do what they did. But I thought it was bad particularly for starving musicians, whatever that means. this is what I would propose. I mean, first of all, I think nobody should share a song unless they know that, the people who own the copyright want it to be shared. And if they don't know that, they shouldn't do it. On the other hand, you could make distinctions between maybe, let's say, artists that make over, you know, $5 million or even $100,000 a year. You say, any artist that makes over $100,000 a year, if you can figure that out, I feel comfortable with taking their work and putting it up on the internet, because that's enough money to make. You could make that argument. I mean, I think that's one way you could draw the line. I'm not saying it's right or legal. I'm just saying that would be a moral way to approach it in my view, and really what I'm considered is my conception, as I think everyone should be, one's personal conception of what's right or wrong. So people who want to do the right thing, it seems to me that, like, if you see a local band in your town and you buy their CD and then you put it on the internet, I don't know if you're serving that band well or not. On the one hand, you're getting their music out, but on the other hand, they have the power to do that themselves if they want to, and if they don't want to, and if they don't want you to do it, I don't think you should do it. The other thing I would say is, I think it would be good if there was a lot more, if there was a system of, I guess, open source for music, so that an artist could have two types of songs. They could say, well, this song is going to be a free song, and I'll put it on the internet. Everyone can distribute it. These other songs I want to protect. I want to sell. I want to whatever, mm-hmm. you know. And but what's uniting all of these things for me is that the person who creates it, I think it should be their choice. I don't think it should be the consumer's choice. And I think that's the basic difference between me and a lot of the people who are calling into your show. They believe it should be the consumer's choice. But I feel that that's not the case in any other kind of property. And so the only reasons to believe what these people believe is either if you don't believe in property at all, which is a legitimate and moral viewpoint, I think you can have that view. There's no such thing as property. So if someone comes into my house and takes all my stuff, that's okay because it's, I don't really own it. Or the only other view is to say that there must be some kind of difference between creative works and any other kind of property, or let's say intangible property or tangible property, or what they call intellectual property versus physical or real property. I don't think there should be that difference. The reason copyrights exist is because intellectual property is so intangible. But I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to try to protect this stuff. Sorry, I gave a big speech there.
No, that's...
I'll just say one other thing.
Mm-hmm.
People will say that my painting example from last week was bad. I said, "Oh, if someone comes in and takes my painting, that would be wrong." Well, what if somebody breaks into my house what if I sell the painting to somebody else and let me think of the example. What if someone breaks into my house, takes a photograph of my painting?
Okay.
And distributes that. What if somebody, what if I give my painting to you and I ask you, please don't photograph it and don't put the copies of the photograph on the internet, and then you do it anyway? It seems to me, beyond just what the law is, you're breaking the bond between the creator and the consumer. And copyright is just sort of a shorthand method of creating a bond between the creator and the consumer. I think anybody has a right to reject it, but any creator has a right to reject it, but I just don't feel like the consumer should have that right to reject those laws. But again, I'm talking from a moral standpoint. Again,
right.
I'm not really talking from a legal standpoint.
Right. I think one thing, there probably might be more than a few of us over here on this side of the microphone that maybe don't have a real strong love of property.
Right.
More than few of us who take a position kind of against it.
Yeah. Fair, and that's consistent. And I'll say, in that case, the person is being morally consistent, and that's fine. The problem is I meet a lot of these people, and when you really get down to it, they do believe in property. They just like to think that they don't.
Right.
But go ahead.
Right. Well, I mean, it is a challenging sort of. We're left in a difficult space where, I guess it seems like obviously your example of just going into your house and taking your picture or you know, taking your painting or a photo of it does seem very invasive and directly sort of contrary to, you know, sort of your wishes, your private space. Yeah. Whereas at the same time, that, I think for a lot of people,
that makes it a bad example, you know.
Yeah.
I just realized. Yeah. I mean, what if I sell you the painting and I don't say anything to you, and then you make copies of it?
Well, see, that seems very different because
right.
that seems more akin to, I mean, especially in sort of our media-saturated society, that seems more akin to just sort of the flood of, you know, the river of information we get all the time that's being bounced everywhere. And so I think it's really easy for people to not see the distinctions, not want to see the distinctions. We get so much, and it doesn't seem to be a big difference in it. We hear it on the radio all the time. They're playing another song. So if the radio can play that song all the time, then why can't I put the song up for other people to hear as well? And
I mean, one of the things that people don't understand is that those radio stations pay for that stuff. And the way that they make their money back is through the advertising. But they actually pay for that music, and people don't know that. And, you know, maybe it would be helpful if radio stations were made to play announcements that, you know the way they do on baseball games, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is owned by the respective copyright holders, and any rebroadcast or retransmission is strictly prohibited, that kind of thing. I mean, it would be stupid in a way, but I mean, at least then people would know what was going on with that. I mean, but you're just talking about people who are maybe not knowing what the rules are. But I think most people know on a gut level that they shouldn't put. If they didn't 10 years ago, they certainly know now that they shouldn't put music on the internet. That's, you know, or that if they do, you know, they're breaking the law. I mean, should or shouldn't is another story. There was something else about this property issue. Oh, yeah. There's another way to look at this, which is outside of property altogether, and that's contract. You know, people who don't believe in property might still believe in the idea of contracts, where I say, you know, if you paint my house, I'll pay you $10, you know, and the idea that the law should enforce that if you paint my house and then I don't pay you the $10, right? So a lot of people, you might not believe in property, but you might say, well, it's only fair that the law makes sure that if people reach a bargain and they sign a contract, that the law should enforce that if somebody breaches it. You know, and you can say the same thing here, that when I buy a record, in a sense, there's an implied contract that I'm not going to distribute the record to people who didn't pay for it. And if we wanted to, we could put that on the record, like they do with software. They have these click licenses that say that you're not going to resell it. You know, and that's contract. That's taking it completely out of property and just saying we have a contract. You and I, but you know, buyer and seller have a contract here.
Right. I think the difficulty there for many folks is that ultimately contracts. I want contracts to be very meaningful, that they are sort of a bond between people, you know, an agreement made out of sort of respect. But by and large, contracts like what we're talking about, like what you're talking about, aren't made between equals. They're not made between people who really have the options of negotiating sort of a fair contract. It's kind of an all or none. We, the company, are offering this. You can take it or like it. And I mean, that seems to be pretty standard in the society we live in sort of a corporate-dominated landscape.
But let me ask you this. Let's say a musician makes a record of their own CDs, right? And on the CD, they say, you know, I'm selling this to you for $5, but please don't put it up on the Internet.
Right. Now, personally, I would have a lot more respect for that, and I wouldn't put it up on the net.
I'm sorry. They don't say please. They say you're buying this on the condition that you agree not to put on the internet, that rather than asking you not to. They're saying, you know, part of the deal here is that you're not going to.
Personally, like for myself, I would go along with that. That'd be
fine
because that's what the artist wants.
Now let's say the artist says, you're buying this record and you're agreeing not to put it on the internet, and if you do, I can sue you for $5,000.
Well, they could try and do that.
I mean, what if the law enforced that? What if the law said we're getting rid of copyright tomorrow, but any artist that wants to do that can do that? Would you be willing to give the artist that kind of power? That's really what we're talking about here. That's my concern, is that the artists have the right to control their work and try to do whatever it is in their power to stop you from doing what they don't want you to do with their work.
What about the label and what they do with your work? Because I think, don't some artists sell all their rights when they sign over a contract? They sign their rights to a label that has those rights, and now they don't become the rights of the artist anymore? I'm not clear on how that works, because I remember I asked you something about the Jonas Hall Kramer, and you said that, I forget what label it was that has it, that they haven't distributed it. But do you still have the rights to those songs, to the Atlantic songs?
Well, they're songs and recordings, and they're two different things. But to answer your question more generally, whenever an artist makes a deal, they're giving up something. It may be a very small thing, like the right, like you're going to give me $1,000 and put it in a movie. Or it may be a very large thing. You're going to give me $1,000 and you're going to sell it to whoever you want to, movies, TV, consumers, and I'm not going to have any rights anymore. The thing here is that the reason I favor giving the artist more power, the creative person more power, is because I think the more power the creative person has, the less likely they are to sign deals with people that might exploit. The better the artist is equipped to exploit their work themselves, the less they have to get into these unsavory situations with major labels that might do more than they want to.
Yeah.
But I'll say one other thing. If I'm a songwriter. Using my example before, maybe on my CD, what I'd want to do is say, don't put this up on the internet, and if you do, I can sue you for $50, right? Maybe that would be my, what I would want to do, But maybe if I sign with a record label, the record label's going to say, don't buy this CD, don't put the CD on the internet, but if you do, I can sue you for $5,000. And I don't want the major label to do that, because I don't want them to be hurting my fans that way. Hmm. So my choice there is to then not sign with the major label. So to my mind, any artist that signs with a major label that does stuff that they think is wrong, I didn't have to sign that contract. My experience was that the labels that I signed with, they didn't do things that I disapproved of, except in the area of pricing. But I thought that was their business decision and not something that, that really.
But does that pricing affect you ultimately with consumers who feel taken advantage of? And
well,
so they feel more.
Yeah. My concern isn't so. I mean, yes, it does. It does. But that is the trade-off that I made. That is the trade-off that anybody makes if they sign a major label. That the label then can do things that I might not want them to do. Or, for example, you sign a publishing deal for your songs, and then some independent movie producer who you think is really cool, and maybe he's even your friend, wants to put your song in their movie. But the publishing company says, well, you got to give us $50,000, and the filmmaker can't do that. Well, the only thing I can say then is, well, you shouldn't have signed the publishing deal. The publisher gave you an advance, and if you had just sort of said, well, I'm not going to take the advance because maybe I want to keep the control myself, then you could have done the deal with the filmmaker yourself. So it's just a choice that you make. I there are plenty of bad things I can say about labels, but I think the problem is that many things that people do to hurt labels hurt artists as well. And in fact, they're going to hurt more artists in the long run than they're going to hurt the labels. And I think, ideally then, if people are going to want to do file sharing, it just seems to me they should be file sharing with some kind of distinction in mind, between between, I guess, artists and or labels that are really doing well and thriving? Mm-hmm. Or how about this? Let's say let's say a label has a particularly good roster of artists. You know, they help out new art. They sign new and interesting artists. Maybe you're not going to file share with that particular label, you know, because you think they're cool. You know, that could be a major label or an indie label, whatever. But, I mean, you know, you can make distinctions about what you're doing, you know, rather than say, well, everything should just be free.
That's kind of what downhillbattle.org is doing.
Yeah.
I'd interviewed somebody earlier today
about
some of those issues. And I read an article recently from Ian McKay from Fugazi. Uh-huh. He also runs Discord Records.
Yeah.
And he had some interesting things to say about file sharing. And how he's not against it, and how he doesn't mind if someone happens to put up his whole album up on the internet so some kid in Pakistan can hear it for free or whatever. But on the other hand, he's against people that charge people for his music, you know, that isn't like whatever Discord Records or what have you.
Yeah.
In that kind of sense.
Well, that seems to be a consistent view. What he's saying is, anybody has the right to give it away, but no one but him should have the right to sell it, is what he's saying.
Right.
I'm not sure I understand the distinction precisely. I mean, my feeling is that if you take my, I think I wrote this in the email to you, if you take my overcoat, I don't really care if you then sell it or give it away. It makes no difference to me. The point is I've lost the overcoat. The difference with intellectual property is I still have, in a sense, the song. But it is diminished, I feel, ever so slightly if it's given to a consumer who might otherwise buy it. But the point that people often make, and I agree with it, is that often people who take, you know, who receive music for free are people who wouldn't have bought it in the first place. And I think that's probably right. And I think the blame for that doesn't go to the file sharers at all. It goes to the labels that charge too much. I strongly believe that if records cost $6 or $7 instead of $15 to $20, a lot fewer, I'd start to feel like a dick for file sharing, you know, if records were that cheap.
Yeah.
Because then why are you really doing it? You know, these guys are no longer being exploitive. So, yeah, I'll never forget I bought a record from this guy for $2, a CD for $2. And that's what he sells his CDs for. Because it costs him $1.50 to make them, and then he's making 50 cents on each one. And I was completely, you know, knocked out by that idea. I thought, wow, that's amazing. And I think that if more labels and more artists, you know, behaved in that way, you know, I mean, there was no artwork on his record. He was just selling the CD, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And just, like, magic marker on it, you know, so... You know, in that case, here's a guy who's really just—he's trying to make a small profit, not a large profit, and it's clear that that's what he's trying to do. And there's a guy you want to help out, you know. So I think the best way to stop file sharing really is to lower the price of records.
Well, I bought Royal Lunch for I think it was $16 at Streetlight Records, which is here locally in town. And then I saw the website. I think it's what $11.98 at Important Records. It's a lot cheaper than I would pay.
Yeah, I guess that's because the record company is, if they sell them direct, then you don't have to pay the local record store. But then again, you know, you're helping to support the local record store when you do that, and there is something to be said for that.
Yeah,
that's true. I think in my life, I pay more for a lot of stuff. You know, I pay more for coffee. Fair trade coffee,
right?
Which some people may be familiar with.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, I don't even like to order cups of coffee in a restaurant anymore because I know it's not fair trade.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I try to only drink fair trade coffee. I pay more for it, and I'm happy to do it. You know, we have working assets long distance here. Same concept. You know, we pay a little more, but you know, some of the money goes somewhere, and it makes you feel better. You know, and there's more and more opportunities to do that all the time. So, I think ultimately, the price of records will come down, and hopefully the file sharing will decrease as well as a result. I really do think that's the only real solution. Because there, I don't think there can be a technological solution to stop people from file sharing. Microsoft will work on it, but if Microsoft actually develops it, people will switch to Apple.
Right. People will always find a way around those barriers.
Yeah.
People
will
always find a way. On a quick note, I just
wanted
to throw in a total plug for Zapatista Coffee.
Okay.
Talking about fair trade coffee. If you get a chance to try it, oh, God, it's good. I drink it every day, and I'm wired on it right now.
Okay.
But the one that I just wanted to hop back to just for a moment, like your example of the coat and somebody taking it, it seems to me that music and other artworks are substantially different in that you can copy and duplicate them and spread them out, but also that sort of the coat is a singular tangible item versus the way that art works, and especially the career of an artist works, is about getting sort of public notice and attention. And so that to some extent, even if somebody is just taking your album, copying it, and you know, sharing those files with the world, there's the part that you lose, like if those people would have bought the album, they don't. But the flip side of it seems to me that the next time you put out an album or another work, you have that much more sort of exposure. People are like, oh, you know, John put out another album. I got to go get it. The last one was so good.
Well, I think that fame, I mean, what we call fame or getting the word out, it also applies to tangible products as well. You know, and for example, you know, a coat is a bad example. Let me think of something cheap like paper clips or matchbooks, let's say. You know, let's say I make matchbooks for a living, and I've got a warehouse with like a billion matchbooks in it, and someone swipes, you know, 10 of them, you know, and says, well, you know, he's got plenty of them, and they're so cheap to make, and then the next time someone wants matchbooks, they'll see the company name on the matchbook cover, and they'll buy it from him. You know, but these I'm going to give away. I realize that's an imperfect example still, but somehow I feel that, like, one of the ways in which people make these arguments is based on it's cheap to copy things now, and all you're getting when you buy something is a copy. So why shouldn't it's free basically to copy stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
So why shouldn't it be free? So why shouldn't the copy be free? Is basically the argument, I think, when you boil it down. Since it's free to create this copy, the copy itself should be free. And I think the answer is, well, but then what does happen to the artist? And you can say, well, he gets more famous, and then the next time people will see that he's got a new record out. But he sees that they see that he has a new record out, and they copy that for free too. So the fame doesn't really help very much unless the artist wants to go on tour. And if the artist, you know, wants to go on tour, maybe that benefits him. But if the artist either can't go on tour, you know, can't afford the gasoline or whatever, it doesn't help him very much. And finally, even if it does help him on tour, I think it should be the artist's choice whether or not these copies are given away without him or her getting money for it. You know, if I want to say, okay, these particular songs are instantly put in the public domain. I wrote them, but I want them to be in the public domain. I can do that. You know, I have that right. But I don't think that other people should force that on me. That should be my choice.
Mm-hmm.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're speaking with John S. Hall from King Missile III. And we just got an email in here from Scooter, who was the last caller from the last show.
Yeah.
He's from radio. He's from KPFT Houston, and he writes a comment for John. Some independent small artists have realized a windfall from file sharing since they can't get airtime and sell more CDs because the single was traded on the net, and file sharing protocol includes the CD title.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, I mean, if people want to agree, look, if the artist says, okay, we're going to release the single on the internet and share it, you know, but they have to buy the whole album, you know, that's the artist's choice, and that's fine.
Uh-huh.
If consumers decide, let's just share one song of this artist's record and try to get people to buy the record, well, that's still good, but it's not as good as asking the artist permission. That's sort of we're going to take the initiative, and the artist doesn't want to give away their stuff, but we're going to do it anyway because ultimately it's going to help the artist, and the artist doesn't know better. We know better. We know how to help this artist make a lot of money, so that's how we're going to do it.
Isn't that what we're doing in a way? I mean, we'll play your stuff and others, and we promote it because we think it's cool music or whatever expression to play on our radio show, and we promote it by saying, you know, who it is, blah, blah, blah.
Well, I'm talking specifically about the example of people who just take a song or a whole album and put it out there themselves. And I make the distinction because, you are providing more than just the songs here. And from what I see anyway, I have to take this whole program to get these songs. I have to listen to the whole program to hear the songs.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if you do something else as well, but talking specifically about putting the songs in a context of a half-hour program or an hour program where in order to hear the music, they have to hear all this other stuff, it's different in a way. The consumer has to work for it in order to get what it is that they ostensibly want. And finally, I think that caller was also the one, I just wanted to mention this, who made the distinction between indie and majors. And I wrote in the email to you that, you know, a lot of times if you look at an indie record contract, and compare it to a major label contract, the indie label contracts can be a lot more unfair. I've looked at both for many years, both as an artist and as a lawyer. And, I've seen a lot of very unfair contracts from independent labels. I'm not going to mention specific ones. But
Oh, do.
but some are a lot more fair than others, you know. And I was surprised by what I saw in contracts from some labels that I had respect for. Mm-hmm. But I'll make the point, though, that the artist always has the right to walk away. You know, if they really want to be on this fantastically cool label. And then they get this crappy contract. They can, you know, they could. They have a choice of going to, a fanzine and saying, "Look at this crappy contract they gave me," or they can sign it and not say anything, you know. And I would advise more artists to make public the kind of crappy things that labels try to get them to sign, because some of it is really nasty. And the thing you can say about major labels is, even if their contracts are as bad, and they often aren't, because major labels don't ask for publishing on your songs, and independent labels do. But the major labels, at least, you know, they give you more money. So they're giving you something more than some of these independent labels are. But, you know, I'm not putting them all there, because there are some indie labels that are like 50-50 deals that are extremely fair, and they don't take your publishing at all. Or, you know, it's all in the spirit of partnership, but some indie labels can be bad. So I just wanted to make that point.
Well, I appreciate you, definitely. and it's good to talk to you to kind of clear up some of those issues from the last interview that we had.
Yeah, well, thanks for, because I emailed you after listening to the show, and I just felt like I wanted to clarify some things and to apologize to you.
No problem. Well, I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling in and talking with us.
Thank you, Matt. I hope I didn't dominate too much. I think I did, but maybe you'll get to talk now when I'm off the phone.
You had a lot of good things to say, okay. And, you know, that was great.
Okay.
Actually, we got to let Amy Goodman talk here in a little
bit.
But, definitely. Maybe we could do this again.
Sure. Email me.
Okay.
And people who want to know about my law firm, it's HaritiHall.com. I think I said that last time. And you can email me directly, john@HaritiHall.com.
And you have a recent release on Important Records, which is a good independent label, ImportantRecords.com.
Yeah, but you probably don't have to buy it. I'm just kidding.
Well, you could download America Kicks Ass for free.
Because we know that's getting a lot of commercial airplay.
Yes, on our station. I recently read that, what's his name?
Howard Stern.
Howard Stern has been playing that song, all cut up with beeps in it so much. It sounds like Morse code's going through it or something. Because they can't, I guess on satellite radio you can't cuss. I don't
know. That might be our version. The label asked us to make a version with beeps in it in case some commercial radio stations wanted to play it. So we did that. And actually, we tried to make it sound crappy. And it does, you know, like because we don't really approve of beeping out stuff. So we made it really, the beeps are really obvious, but Howard Stern took that version, I think, and played it, because Howard Stern saw the light and became anti-Republican last year, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, well, I appreciate you spending the time talking with us, and I think we want to play something off the new album. Any requests off the top of your head that would sound good to you?
If it's okay if we do that.
I think, as I also said in the email, I don't actually think I have the right to give you permission. All I can do is say, you know, if you're going to play something, I don't know, I mean... now I can't remember what's on that record, but
another political poem. Good yeah. Things is I like that one. It's fun. Antimatter is fun.
Antimatter. Fun. What's the song after America Kicks Ass?
Suggested response to the coming crisis. That's
oh,
a good
yeah,
one too.
I like that one a lot.
I do too. Yeah, I know that doesn't get a lot of mainstream.
I don't know if people know this, but I wrote that actually before Bush took office, when I knew he was going to take office. So I figured, oh, there's going to be a lot of crises. So that's why I wrote that one. Anyway.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to chat with us again, John S. Hall from King
thank
Missile.
You. Thank third. You, Bob. Thank
and,
you, Matt.
Yeah, and thank you for all your work over the years. It has just personally brought me so much joy and laughter and rolling on the floor.
Definitely.
Well,
we really appreciate it.
I believe Matt was the first one to play King Missile on free radio, I would say.
Yeah,
it's Saturday. It was what it was.
Long, long 10 years ago. Yep.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.
Alrighty.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Take care,
we're
John.
We're hanging up now, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
All right, take care. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, freakradio.org, John S. Hall. Hope that cleared some things up for folks. Stay tuned, stand by. This is off of their latest album, King Missile III, Royal Lunch. Important Records.
To admit that I don't have an ounce of common sense, but I think people should be fucking in the streets. Ass fucking. Especially women fucking men in the ass with dildos. This country needs a lot more sodomy. Is there a lot of crises are coming? Global warming as we rape Alaska for oil, return of coat hanger abortions, downward economic spirals, nuclear terrorism, reemergence, burn the motherfucker down, fuck the police, blow it all up and let's start all over again. It will be a dark and frightening time, and our retarded president will offer little solace or hope. If you think things cannot get any worse, you have no imagination and no sense of history. I'm not saying it's hopeless. I'm saying that these times call for desperate measures. They call for creative responses. They call for public nudity and ass-fucking and cunnilingus and prayer and ritual. I'm talking about a spiritual, sexual revolution, and I don't care if you're heterosexual, homosexual, bisexual, asexual, monogamous, polygamous, polymorphously perverse, fetishistic, submissive, dominant, water sports, Madonna or whore, old, fat, ugly, handicapped, repressed, frightened, ashamed, or even a proud, white, American jerk-off fuckface who irresponsibly and thoughtlessly makes matters worse by talking stupid shit and voting like shit for brains. We must fuck our way out of this, all of us. We are responsible for our recovery, for our salvation. We must fuck our way out of this, and we must fuck for God. We must offer our cunts and our cocks to Allah, to Buddha, or Krishna, or whomever. We must make our sexual offerings as sacraments to the Earth Mother, the Universal Spirit, the Grand Unifying Force, and that spirit will get us through these crises. Jacking off is fine. If you don't want to fuck somebody, fuck yourself. Repeatedly, reverently, and outdoors. They have to be able to see you doing it with pride and religious conviction. And when they ask you what you are doing, you must tell them you are praying. And when they ask you why you are doing it, you must tell them, because I have seen the light, I have heard the voice, and seen the vision, and the voice said go out and fuck and fuck and fuck, and the vision said the same thing, visually, with gestures and elaborate mudras. And so yea, I say unto you, fuck and fuck and fuck and fuck, for politics and law have failed us, and only religion and sex and possibly science will save us. So go outside and fuck for your God, fuck to save the planet, fuck to save us all, and fuck and fuck and fuck immediately and often, as soon as it gets warm again.
Taking samples from other people's records is one of the most widespread and controversial aspects of computer music. The concept of using snippets of taped sounds to make collages of music is not new. Nowadays, it is easy for anyone to sample sections of recordings from LPs or CDs to make new recordings using your computer sequencer.
The Funky Drummer. The Funky Drummer.
They've simply gone to the record, sampled the drummer. They've simply gone to the record, sampled the drummer. Put it with their groove. Suddenly their groove sounds sort of real and funky. And it's a vibe. And the artists are making money. The artists are making money. The artists who did it originally aren't making a penny. The artists who did it originally
are now starving in New York. The Funky Drummer. The Funky Drummer.
But is it legal?
The major record labels say that downloading their music from the internet is stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show. When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. When an MC rhymes over a sampled beat, that's stealing.
Happy birthday to you.
Have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant? Watch out, happy birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? And stop giving them your money. Don't pay for major label music, and make sure your friends and family don't either.
How about trying this future on for size?
Even better, burn them CDs of the music they like, so they won't even want to buy it. If we pull the plug on the major labels, music gets better.
Spectators, but not participants.
You can't legislate people's behavior.
To find out more about what you can do, check out downhillbattle.org.